welcome to the CX Chronicles podcast. This is the show for customer service managers, VPs of customer experience, and all of you other CXers out there. Every week, we are going to dig into topics, challenges, wins, and updates in the CX and customer service community. I'm your host, Adrian Brady Chisana. Check us out at cxchronicles.com. Feel free to reach out to us anytime. Thank you so much for being a part of the CX Chronicles Nation. Zendesk, the platform where all the action is. Do you need help with customer interactions across phone, chat, email, social media, and any other channel that you can imagine? All coming together in one place. Ask CX Chronicles how Zendesk can help your business today. Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to the CX Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Brady Chisana. Robert, welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Guys, super excited for today's show. We have an awesome guest. Robert's going to walk us through his story, and he's going to give us a ton of interesting tips and ideas and tricks around how he and the PMG team think about the four CX pillars and how they've really kind of gotten their business to the position that it's in today. So, Robert, I'd love to hop right into things. And why don't you take a couple minutes to tell the CX Nation your elevator pitch. Give us some ideas around how you sort of got into your leadership and your team management role and how you landed in the position that you're in today as the CTO of PMG.
Well, sure. So thanks and for the introduction. I've been in computer software since I can remember. I started coding when I was 12, bugging my dad for a Radio Shack color computer back then. And got my first paid job doing software development actually at 15. And I had a chance to help a very small insurance company cleaning up duplicate records in their massive database. So that was pretty exciting. I was already helping optimize business process at 15 with software. And I've just loved computers basically as long as I can remember. And I feel like it's something that really everybody can enjoy and get a lot of value out of. And just that sort of parlayed right into my career. I kind of always known what I wanted to do, which is to write software. I love, just even as a hobby, writing video games and thinking about graphics and communication and how it can lead to something fun for people to do with technology. And that really sort of parlayed into the business that I'm part of today. And we started out doing custom application development quite some time ago, back in the 90s, and really figured out that we were particularly good at building software that our customers could use without our help. And just over a period of time, say over a decade of doing that, we honed a lot of what we learned about writing from the ground up business to consumer type applications, business to business, and even business process automation into the platform that we have today, which is the digital business platform that our customers use to automate their internal business processes. So, if clients around the world, a lot of them are global. We are based in Atlanta, and we have some popular ones that you may know of. We sort of have that infamous big soft drink company based here in Atlanta.
sure.
Super fast sports car company with their U.S. headquarters here. You might have shopped in one of our clients' home improvement stores, also based out of Atlanta. So there's a lot of clients that we have. And so our focus has been just that, how do we help very large customers? They have a particular set of problems. How do we help them automate and improve their business? And that's the capability of our platform. It's thinking about tying together all of your people and all of your systems and an optimized manner that may involve your people looking at their mobile phones. It may involve complex ERP systems that are in the fulfillment process, making sure that the end-to-end delivery is optimized. So that's our quick pitch, and happy to talk about it some more.
I love it. No, I think it's an awesome foundation laid for what we're going about to hop into with the 4CX pillars, but super, super helpful. Couple follow-on questions for you. I think it's interesting, you know, when we ask some of our different guests on the show sort of how they got to where they are today, did you know at the time when you sort of fell in love with computers, did you realize, Robert, that did you realize how big it was actually going to become and how over time, you know, through the 90s and through the 2000s and into today, like, that it was literally going to completely change the world as we know it? Or did you really just simply like, you liked being around computers, you liked being on the computer, you liked dealing with some of the early games? Did you have a sense for how big this was going to become and how it was going to lead into your career? Or was it really just kind of the first passion, the first thing that got you started on your journey?
That's a funny question. I love it. I had a college roommate once tell me, "Wow, Robert, you're so smart for picking, you know, computer software. You're going to do so well in life." It's like, I didn't really pick it. It's great that it's a very amazing field, and it's expanded so immensely, and that it has changed the world. I would do this even if it was sort of, you know, just custodial work. I just love being in software and technology. Like I said, it's my hobby as well as my career. So I've always been that way. When I started, you know, getting a computer was going to the mall and shopping at Radio Shack. It wasn't really like where the cool kids hung out.
Right.
I've always loved it from the very beginning.
No, I love that. And it reminds me, Robert, of kind of even growing up in my side. Just, I remember spending hours and hours and hours around the computer, and whether it was my parents or friends saying, "What are you doing?" And like, well, you know, "Let's get outside or let's play." I had the same type of approach where for me and my brother and, you know, our friends, a handful of our friends, we grew up on the computer. And it's funny because at the time, we didn't necessarily know that all of our careers were going to be completely surrounded by technology and, you know, being on the computer every day or building companies on the internet and all this fun stuff. We did it because we loved it. We did it because it was fun. We did it because it was there was something new to learn every day, whether it was some new system or some new program. And it's the same type of thing as you, man. It was really kind of how this natural passion and this natural gravitation towards computers, technology, and then all the things that came after that, man. That's the same type of thing. So I think it's awesome that we have the same type of lens right there. I'd love to hop right into the first CX pillar. You kind of already hit on a little bit of this, but love to hop into the first CX pillar of team. Can you talk with us a little bit today about how your team is built? Give us a little sense for, you know, who the people are on the team. What are some of the different roles? How do you guys kind of think about, you know, team collaboration and connectivity?
Well, the lion's share of our business is made up of the software development. We wholly own the applications creation and delivery and support. All of it's based out of our headquarters, and then we do have a services component, but our services team is exceptionally undersized for the types of projects that we're delivering for our customers. So the reason being is we have a very advanced capability in this concept of low code or no code space, where I can build very complex systems or solutions without knowing how to write software. If I'm a very capable business analyst and I have a little bit of a sense of technology, I can build very impressive applications from beginning to end in this software that we provide. So our organization then really becomes an extension of our clients' organizations. And we really are focused on delivery of successful projects and ongoing engagements. We have incredible client retention. And our customers tend to own the lion's share of implementation of our projects. So we have these very small teams with very smart people. We're very privileged to work with very talented folk on our inside of our clients' businesses, but they're really exceptionally small, and they're sort of extended, if you will, by their own internal organization. So, you know, I know our topic is going to transition into user experience, and as a perfect example, these bigger companies tend to have user experience teams, and we can take advantage of them and really work with them and integrate tightly with their business operations internally to deliver the solutions that they need.
That's pretty cool. I'd love to pause you for a second and expand on this. So on top of the team that your business PMG is built, a part of the actual customer experience, customer relations, and customer service aspect is also working with your clients' teams. That's super interesting. Can you kind of spend a couple minutes talking with us about what is that like? Because I guess most of the listeners of our show sort of already have a really good sense for it can be tough just to work with your existing team, your internal team, right? Everyone's got crazy schedules. Absolutely. Everyone's got too much stuff on their plate. Everyone's got different times. They still have their real lives outside of work, right? What is it like to work with other companies' teams, with your clients' teams? How does that sort of look? And how have you guys kind of gotten better as you've grown the business with doing that type of thing? It's got to be really interesting.
Well, it certainly can be frustrating in the sense that if you're bringing a solution to the table that actually can deliver very complex solutions exceptionally fast, you really hit these internal barriers pretty quickly where the other groups and organizations might not be there, right? They might be on 90-day response cycles, and you're just not going to get out of them what you need in time to deliver. So that's a big challenge. And we are pretty fortunate, I think, in that our customers tend to be a bit more forward-thinking. They're looking to adapt and grow and change, and they're willing to back the initiatives that they've set out to achieve. So I think it really works pretty well when you've got that top-down and bottom-up belief in the final systems that need to be built. And it does hurt sometimes when they fight those internal politics or delays that happen. But success helps get around a lot of those barriers. So when you can point at the system that works and say, hey, look, we're already done and we're just waiting on you, that tends to help overcome those barriers. I hope that makes sense and that's helpful.
No, that makes perfect sense. That's super helpful and perfect segue for jumping into the second CX pillar of systems and tools. So I'd love for you to spend a couple minutes kind of expanding on, give us a sense for what your team's toolkit looks like. And I would love, because you're really close to the technology side of the business, I'd love for you to kind of talk with us about what the evolution of your toolkit looked like. How did you guys get to understanding what are all the tools that we need, number one? Number two, you're in a unique type of situation where you're also building your clients' tools. So there's got to be some interesting stuff that happens there. I'd love for you to kind of talk with us a little bit about systems and tools.
Sure. So our application is completely web-based, and basically the idea is that we provide a set of building blocks that our customers can put together, and that's sort of a pro and a con, right? You have this box of Legos, and you tell the customer, "Hey, you can build whatever you need. You just need to start building it."
Yep.
And a lot of times, people want to hear you have these like ready to go out of the box, and to a large extent, we do. But it's amazing how different everybody's same quote unquote same process is within their business. No two businesses get a cell phone to their employee the same way. It's really kind of shocking just how different they are. But you do find patterns, and there are opportunities to put these together. And all that's thrown into our stack today, so you can sort of hit the ground running a little bit faster. But you asked, how did we get here? That's a great question. I think a lot of our strength came out of our custom application development years. We started back in the 90s, back when B2C was a commonly thrown out phrase, right? That business to consumer and shopping sure. experience and
yep.
everybody was just riding that wave of building e-commerce sites. And we did just so many of those types of projects, really cool end user experiences, restaurant chains with really amazing interfaces for, you know, they had to really drag or draw their customer in. They're almost like little mini movie experiences on the internet. Really cool stuff. But our real kind of love was in business to business and more complex and advanced applications. We saw that we could really shine in helping unravel those more intractable problems that businesses face. And how, not just thinking about the end users of systems, but the total user stack, like who owns the system that supports end users and who are the builders of the solutions that are going out to the customers and what are they faced with? And so we've really focused on what it takes to deliver a platform to a business that they can own themselves. And we've just really thought through that process of that user experience chain, right?
Yep.
Not just the end user that's involved in delivery. And I think the years of experience that cutting our teeth on what does it mean that an order on a flower site delivered on time and what does, it's not just end customers. There are internal customer service reps that have to own that order and do. And then business management wants details about numbers and response times and how many orders are going out. So understand the more complex picture really helped us put together the solution that we have today. And we're able to see the results and the customer feedback. And I love now that, you know, there's like Yelp for business type services online and your customers can put it out there right out in the open. It's a fast food restaurant, but even big business software packages are getting grilled and reviewed openly in front of everyone. It's pretty exciting.
Oh, absolutely. We had Robert a few weeks back. We had Andrew Stapleton from G2 on the show. And it was funny because Andrew was talking about just so the G2 platform with all these awesome software solutions. Go to G2. You get all of this incredible candid feedback from users who've already bought the product, used the product, implemented the product. Maybe they love the product. Maybe they hated the product. And it was really interesting talking to Andrew about sort of what the G2 team has built and how they've created this watering hole of where all sorts of software users can go to this place, get real-time live feedback, get a bunch of extra information about what tool is going to be best for their business, and then go along their way with their purchasing decision. So I hear you. I think we're living in a really, really incredible time in terms of what that looks like. And then on top of it, it puts a totally different level of pressure on today's businesses with being able to keep up with the Joneses, put the best possible foot forward with whatever your product or your service is, and then pay attention to what the customers are saying, because if you're not going to be responding and if you're not going to be reacting to what your customers are saying, you're not going to have a lot of customers for very long. So it's all totally agree with everything that you kind of hopped into there.
It's I love it. And you know that we used to focus heavily on function over form, meaning we were extremely efficient and very good at what we did, but maybe we didn't look so cutting edge and so pretty. And we just got taken to the mat by one of our customers. It's kind of commonly known as the number one marketing company in the world. And so they kind of knew what they were talking about. And they went to us and they said, software is kind of ugly. and we took it to heart.
Sting?
After a little bit of heart.
Right.
Oh, it stopped. But we knew it was true, and we took it very seriously, and we went out and hired a leading edge user experience firm that was very advanced in understanding software, and we learned so much. It's not just about is it a pretty interface. It's the colors and so on. You know, I do think there's a burden you put on users to tell you how to make your software better when it, if it's really close, if it looks really good and it's really close to what they want, they can provide better feedback about how they'd like to see it or differently or things they'd like to see it do next. But if it's so far from the desired goal that they can't really tell you much without, you know, telling you how to do your job, then you're not going to get a lot of useful feedback. So we got so much out of this effort, this exercise, probably a 6-month engagement with the, with this company. Love them and would happy to talk about them further, but it was so much more than pretty colors. It was, how does the user interface work? You know, is it, should you have card style layouts for your data instead of a table? And yep. Should you have a drop down or a and then understanding too, user experience is not about even an interface sometimes. The person might want to work on their cell phone or be on Slack or whatever their favorite, you know, communication software is. Maybe it's voice. We don't know. So just thinking about that entire process, and it really got us sort of amped up and encouraged to go back to our customers and say, you know, you really owe it to your users to deliver for them an exciting interface. And by the way, we've made that a lot easier to do now because just out of the box, everything is, looks great. But it isn't just, is it pretty, but what's their experience like? And it could be speed of delivery, right? It's not even necessarily that they saw something. It's just about how fast they got it. And was it accurate? And that sort of encouraged us to go back and be a little bit more out thinking or just a little bit more vocal about our beliefs with the customers, saying, you know, you really got to think about everyone who owns the applications and this, and you sort of have to shift from a project management mindset into a product owner perspective and think about what it means to own the solution and what your users are used to every day. Because you said computers change the world, right?
Yep,
you can buy something online and get that same day now.
Yep.
So,
yeah, it's crazy.
Everything's changed and it's amazing.
To
experience all of this.
And to add to it, Robert, too, right, that because of all these incredible new solutions and these incredible new companies and all these changes, it has changed the customer expectation set dramatically. So now, regardless of what type of product or what type of service your business is, all of these other big guys, these Amazons and these Ubers and these Airbnbs and these Facebooks of the world, they fundamentally changed the way that customer and consumer expectations work. So it even so talk about adding even more pressure onto all that goes into running, building, scaling, and growing these businesses. Now, Robert, I'd love to, you've already kind of touched on some of it, but for the third CX pillar of process and workflows, can you get into the weeds a little bit on, as you were talking about some of these different processes that you and the team had to think about, and as you were talking about some of the different clients that you were working with where you had to literally learn their processes, what were some of the tips or some of the tricks that you sort of discovered around how you could best pull those workflows out, specifically with your clients, right? Because they've got their own processes and their own workflows. What were some of the things that you guys would do to understand those processes and to actually build out what the corresponding workflows looked like so you even knew where to get started with the given project?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're a little bit, or maybe in large part, the benefactors of our own platform. The strongest recommendations we have for our clients is build something and do it fast and verify your ideas, validate your concepts, and know that you're actually building something that people want and that it's possible. There are so many assumptions that people make about the way they think things are. And once you actually have to wire up an API call into an internal system, you really find out that they're radically different than you expected.
Yep.
That the data might be broken and ugly. You might think that you can search that third-party system and you can't, and now you find you need something new.
Yep.
Or maybe you were hoping to use that third-party data for your end users, but it takes 12 seconds seconds to get her that system. Now what are you going to do?
Yep.
You know, 12 seconds is fine on the back end, handing off an API call to another system to deliver some data, but your end users are going to become very frustrated with that experience. So getting that out in up front as fast as possible is really important to successful delivery, and encouraging customers to not just deliver phase one, but really think of for the whole life cycle of this thing. And once you've built it, are you done, or do you want to keep going and make it better and better over time?
Sure. Yep, that makes sense. And is this similar to the idea of how other entrepreneurs and other teams have utilized and really sort of iterated on the notion of building out minimal viable products first and foremost, make sure that A, the thing is even a tool or even a product or even a thing that anybody cares about, number one. And then number two, in building the simplest yet effective type of tool, you already begin to learn a ton. You learn what the users think. Your team learns what it's actually going to take to build the future version. Is this the kind of thing that you're sort of talking about, Robert?
It is. Even still to this day, we get these every now and then we get these engagements where there's this expectation that we're going to define a bunch of requirements up front.
Yep.
And that is really challenging to say, for example, okay, this is a massive insurance enrollment system, and we're going to know before this thing's even live what all the people internally are going to want to deliver those contracts effectively. You haven't figured out that your enrollment data is going to look a certain way. You haven't figured out what your problems are going to be. You just don't know until something's live and running. And that is challenging to get the customers to think iteratively, that they don't have to front, and also be willing to endure some pain that, because you don't know everything up front and you want to experiment, you're going to make mistakes. It's okay if you can fix them quickly. So if you've got a magic pill for how to convey that message better, I'd love to hear it, because it's probably our biggest challenge today is that getting that understanding that it's okay for things not to go perfectly day one because you didn't think of 100% of your problems up front.
Yep. Well said, man. You're spot on. And I think, you know, Robert, just to add to that, I think this is one of the big reasons why you continue to see agile design thinking or user experience thinking or user design or just design thinking in general. This is, I think, one of the big reasons why you're seeing all of these different thought centers just growing in popularity. You're seeing companies, and specifically technology and software companies, using these types of tactics every day, because the reality is you don't know what you don't know. And so one of the easiest ways that you get your team and you get your customers into the weeds of figuring out what you do need to figure out and what you do need to know, it's by thinking creatively. It's by knowing that it's okay to crash and burn. It's okay to put something together, test it, see what happens, build the next one the next day. You know, kind of like, you know, living fast, breaking things quickly as you need to, but constantly going back to that whiteboard and constantly going back to your team to think about how you can build the next best thing or the next level item so that you can keep pushing it into the future. I love that stuff.
Me too. I deliver that message better to. And then I think we'll all be happier. But yeah, it's a necessary growing pain. I think, you know, it's sort of back to that project manager versus product owner or product manager mentality. It's you're okay with a few returns on your product when you're just trying to get something out the door. But businesses tend to have maybe it's a little risky inside of big companies to take on such big challenges and to make mistakes or to have a, you know, something beyond Six Sigma failure rate, right?
That
needs to be acceptable in the modern era. You just can't be everything to everyone. I mean, even the cloud services, if you look at Amazon, Azure, Google, they know they can't achieve literally 100% uptime, but they're doing it and they're working. They're succeeding.
Yep. That's a good point. And then on top of it, we all know and we've all seen a plethora of examples of, to your point, when these big, huge, massive companies kind of aren't comfortable with some of this thinking, and they're not comfortable with some of this iteration, and they're not comfortable with making some of those changes. This is when big, huge spaces that maybe are a little bit antiquated are ripe for disruption. And that's when these little companies come along, and 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, they're doing billions in sales. They've uprighted the entire market, and it's all because they were perfectly comfortable taking those risks, breaking stuff on the reg, and just constantly figuring out how to build the next best thing.
You got it.
So, Robert, I would love to move into the fourth and final CX pillar of feedback. Now, on this show, I love asking guests about two different facets of feedback. I'd love to start with the first question is, can you talk with us a little bit about how you guys are soliciting and using your customer feedback today?
Well, we have always felt that we are... We used to say 100% customer driven. We sort of realized we can't really be 100%. We also have to kind of know where we're going as a business. So we got a little bit more realistic, and we just started saying, okay, we hear you, and your voice is the most important thing to us. So give us your ideas. Tell us what you want. You know, when we started back in building this in software and launched the product in I think roughly around 2007, that was funny. That was an interesting time. You couldn't tell your customers, hey, give me your best ideas. I'll bake them into the platform. They got a tendency to intellectual property rights and get a little sensitive.
Yep.
But that's very radically changed today. Everyone understands that if they share their best ideas, it's just going to come back and pay them back even further. So,
yep.
But we used to just really kind of work very fluidly over time with our customers, just to hear their feedback and take everything seriously. Obviously, you know, as we scaled, we had to start prioritizing. Not every request was number one priority.
Totally.
But
yep.
Probably one of the best things we did was we could sort of notice in our support activities who were our maybe loudest voices or enduring the most pain around a particular area of our application. And instead of just fixing what they asked for every time, we sought them out and put those customers together and said, hey, we'd like to put you in charge of the roadmap of this area of our application. If you'd be willing to work with others that have their own visions and goals of what they'd like to see this thing do, you're open to work with them. And that was amazing for us. So we would tackle, say, you know, something we call the work dashboard, which is where people go to find out the activities and work they're responsible for in our application. Let's build a committee of customers and say, help us make this better. What does it need to do for you? And that was huge. So we've always embraced that feedback. We like to say that we're very privileged to work with very intelligent people, very creative people, and we are. So we want to hear what they have to say, and we embrace it, and it's paid off. And you know, even just when your customer thinks your baby's not the prettiest.
Yep.
maybe it's time to take the baby to get a haircut, you know?
Yeah,
It's okay.
Yep. And I love the idea, though, of customer committee. I think for our listeners on the show, right, you got a bunch of startup founders, growth-focused company executives. Customer committees can be huge, right? Number one, most companies are getting pretty good at doing their NPS and their CSAT surveys, so that's one aspect. But when you can start to build out a living, breathing customer committee from some of your best, most dedicated, most loving customers, customers that love you and you love them, that is gold. You get, whether it's done in the fashion of focus groups or whether you're doing Zoom chats or Skype chats or whether you're just getting people on a customer committee call, that stuff is awesome. I'm super happy to hear that you guys are doing that. And I've seen it done in a variety of businesses where you really do get a collective voice around the things that are the most important, the things that are the least important. And then from a prioritization perspective, man, does it make it a lot easier for you and your team to know where to sort of double down and where to spend the resources that you've got to spend.
And when they see their ideas come to fruition, it builds that bond. You really just can't. It's sort of irreplaceable, right? There's a belief that their voice is being heard. They see the results. They know it's more than just them alone on an island, yep, hoping that this thing pans out. They know there are others that care. And that matters. That we're all people, right? Even yep, though this is all technology we're talking about, we're still just people at the end of the day.
And totally.
Yeah.
Now, what about your employee feedback, Robert? Can you spend a couple minutes kind of chatting about how you guys kind of use? So you talked when you were talking about the team. How do you sort of use some of the things that the folks at PMG are seeing or thinking or hearing or learning each day? How do you get their feedback and inject it back into the product and the service offerings?
Well, that's a great question. It's similar to how we've set up the customer councils for feedback. We have committees internally that are focused on driving that capability within our own organization, because we do have to sort of acknowledge that our services people are going to be fairly advanced, highly knowledgeable of the software platform, and are privy to conversations and information about how the product works that maybe someone who's just on a single customer won't have access to, just because they're not working in our office day by day or, part of solving problems for the platform's sake, but for their own sake. And so we've just built up internally the same concept. And we have, for example, a head of customer success or a head of customer experience, and their goals are to deliver that same type of feedback internally. And it involves bringing our own minds together. And we've literally sat the teams down in an office and throw out post-it notes and say, tell us how the product could be better. What can it do? And it was sort of the precursor to that user experience chain, the concept that I like to talk about, where you have your end user, the customer, and you have your people that are responsible for delivering the applications that you've built in the platform. And then you have the people who are responsible for building the solutions that people are going to support those end customers. And it's absolutely amazing. The further up the user experience chain you go, the more obscure your problems are, but it always or almost always brings out opportunities to expose more information down that chain. So you might say, well, I have a business user and they would like to know if their order is going through well. Well, why would you hide that information if the people who support them need that same information? Can you just take what they need and bring it back out to that end user? And similarly for people who are building on the platform, well, maybe they need to know the health of the application. Is it running well? Is it doing its job? Well, how far down do you want to expose that information out to your customer so that they can do their job effectively? So it's really paid off over time, and it's just a recurring theme within our organization and our product and our engagements and within our customers to help them think about that whole process, that whole life cycle of delivering something that all the users that are involved in the solution are going to experience.
Yeah, no, I love that, and I think you're absolutely right. Where, look, the companies that are able and in a position to be around as long as you guys have been around, and to have the opportunity and the privilege to work with some huge, huge global company, right? It's because many, many times they do understand the importance of focusing on what that customer thinks. They do spend the time and the money and the energy to collect and to stratify and to assess that information. And then on the same side, they take the time to think about what their team thinks, the people that are building that product, building that service, working with those customers. The companies that really get to stick around for a long time, that's what they do phenomenally well. And it's so thank you for sharing that, and thank you for kind of chatting us through what that looks like. Super, super helpful. Robert, I would love to, as we get ready to wrap up today's episode, I want to make sure that I give you an opportunity to talk about any new or exciting upcoming features with PMG, any highlights or things that you want to pitch. Maybe there's roles that you're hiring for. Maybe there's new projects that you're working on. Maybe there's new offerings that you have for customers. Love to turn the mic over to you and share with us anything that you'd kind of like to share about what's happening inside of PMG. And then also, where can people find you guys? Where can people find you, Robert, and where can people find PMG?
So I'm on LinkedIn, just like everybody else in the business world. And just you can find me as Robert Castles, Castles, and PMG, Paul Mary George, just three letters. You'll find me in LinkedIn. Wow, great question. What would I tell people about our platform? Well, you mentioned G2. We love them. Go check us out on G2. You can read what other people have to say about us and maybe spend a little bit more time getting under the covers of, you know, what is a digital business platform or what is business process automation and why do I care as a big business? And what, you know, do I care about low code? You know, I could just ship off my projects to be outsourced and custom coded, but wow, there's some opportunity there if you're willing to think about building it yourself and owning the entire stack. So along those lines of, you know, what's exciting and really amazing in our platform these days, in addition to building out very advanced processes, workflows end to end that might help you do something like onboard an employee or get a cloud server provisioned quickly, we're just plotting ahead tremendously on this concept of build your own applications, build your own APIs around your legacy applications, and tie it all together trivially and seamlessly and effortlessly into experiences that meet your end users' needs no matter what they look like. So do they want to get to you by Slack or cell phone or telephone, text message, whatever it is that they need to get through their day better and faster? That's our focus, is again back to that full better user experience, right? Making that day better for them makes our day better. So I think that I'll leave it there for the elevator pitch, and you can find me on LinkedIn and our website, pmg.net, not .com, we're pmg.net. Check us out.
That's awesome. Robert, first of all, thank you so much for coming on, talking with the CX Nation about your story, about your team's story, about your business's story. This was super helpful, man. It's awesome to have folks coming on the show and sharing the things that have worked, the things that haven't worked, the challenges, the struggles. This is why we're here, man. This is why we do the show. And I'm super, super appreciative of you taking the time to come on and share that with us. Thank you so much for joining the show, and best of luck, sir, to you and to the PMG team in the near future.
Thanks, Adrian. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Have a great day, Robert.
All right. Thanks.
For listening to another episode of CX Chronicles. Be sure to subscribe, save, and share with all of your fellow CXers. And until next time, make happiness a habit, CX Chronicles Nation. Check us out at cxchronicles.com.